Welcome to part two of Ungagged's podcast based loosely around the Carl Lebnick quote, "The basic law of capitalism is you or I, not both you and I." And before I introduce the short pods and music for this section, I'd like to say a huge thank you to our art department, Red Rafe and Deborah Torrance, for their interpretations of the theme. Two talented people. Rafe's podcast piece was on Monday night's release. If you haven't heard it, go to our website and find it. Part three of our podcast on this theme will be released on Saturday night. The world is in a state of chassis, wrote John O'Casey, and by Jiminy it is. The UK has voted under the direction of proto-fascists and ultra-right-wing poshos to impoverish people slowly, and given that task over to the party who want to impoverish the poor further. America has voted to impoverish many more people and build a wall that will, of course, like every other wall built to keep people in and out in history, will eventually fall and be seen as the folly it is. South America is slowly being retaken by the CIA, and here in Scotland we are being ruled by a Tory party we never voted for after voting to stay in a Tory gammon and aristocratic union that is determined to eventually rebuild the Spitfire and go to war with Germany again. Anyway, don't worry about all of this depressing news. Just plug in your devices and watch cute puppies do funny things on YouTube. Celebrate the reforming of the Spice Girls and make sure your vote is counted in the latest X Factor Has Got Talent in the Jungle. Remember, we are on Twitter @_ungagged, Facebook, and we also need your dosh as we're self-funding. Please donate a small amount to keep us going. paypal.me/ungagged left. On this episode, Paul Sheridan, lead singer of The Wakes, tells us profit before people, Coca-Cola is it. The talented Deborah Torrance tells us a few Brexit jokes. Aye, Brexit can be funny. And Glasgow councillor Mary Hunter talks about Brexit, the Scottish independence referendum, and the equal pay settlement in Glasgow City Council. With the last exciting instalment of Tales of the Gerlach, entitled Hodder, Superheroes, Riots and Cleaning Up, and music from Dream Nails with their track Fascism is Coming, The Wakes with The Battle of George Square, David Rovics and After the Revolution, and Sister Ghost with Emily, enjoy!
Capitalism is you or I, not you and I. Capitalism, while it is the main economic force which drives the world, fails time and time again to support those who exist in the rat race. And we are not rats, we are humans. Time and time again, it fails to meet the needs of the majority. The 1% who control the money, resources and wealth of the planet, driving up costs and lowering wages as natural resources are harvested. The words of the worker's song ring true. We've never owned one handful of earth. Profit high, wages low. The triangular top-down model of capitalism, with hierarchical organisations ruling at the top, a privileged few who control the monopoly, and while the rich get richer, the poor get poorer, in a world of austerity, uncertainty and government cuts. In this pod, it isn't about organising some mass uprising, nor is it about devising plans for an alternative world or suggestions for a new system. It's about equality, and the equality of workers. This week, we commemorate the men and women of Red Clydeside. Thursday the 31st of January, marking the 100th anniversary of Bloody Friday, the Battle of George Square, John McLean, Delivering his famous speech from the dock the previous year in April 1918, here is the accuser of capitalism, dripping with blood from head to foot. How much has this changed? We still put profit before people. While capitalism does not have a symbol, Coca-Cola, it could be argued, has been accepted by many as a symbol of the American free market and may be perceived as one of the true symbols of this economic theory. Coca-Cola, that lovely fizzy stuff that was invented in 1886 by John Stith Pemberton and bought out by American businessman Asa Griggs Candler, whose marketing tactics led Coca-Cola to its dominance of the world's soft drink market throughout the 20th century, and also in the process changed how Santa looks, but that's another story. A product that millions of people all over the world are willingly to pay to consume every single day, Coke budgets much more for its advertising, even higher so than Microsoft and Apple combined. In this process, Coca-Cola becomes intrinsically part of a culture. My favourite, most powerful line from any Clash song is in Straight to Hell. Let me tell you about your blood bamboo, kid. It ain't Coca-Cola, it's rice. Powerful stuff. However, Coca-Cola is an example of a company that has very much put profit before people, and rightly so have been criticised for their policy regarding the health and safety of workers. In different parts of the world, Coca-Cola has been accused of dehydrating communities in its pursuit of water resources to feed its own plants companies, and as a result, drying up farmers' wells and destroying local agriculture. The company has also violated workers' rights in countries such as Colombia, Turkey, Guatemala and Russia. And only through its multi-million dollar marketing campaigns can Coke sustain this clean image that it craves. It is anti-trade union in these parts, with violence carried out on trade unionists and trade unionists involved in disputes with the company disappearing. In the South Indian state of Kerala, Coca-Cola overused and contaminated local water resources. 4 months earlier, the Kerala High Court had ruled that Coke's heavy extraction from the common groundwater resource was illegal and ordered it to seek alternative resources for its production. As a result, the plant closed down due to the damage it caused the local community and the court case that arrived. The alternative report on Coca-Cola from War and Want a few years ago also detailed how Coca-Cola is having a devastating effect on water resources elsewhere in the world. In El Salvador, the company has been accused of exhausting water resources over a 25-year period. In Chiapas, the Coca-Cola is positioning itself to take control of water resources. And the Mexican government, under Vicente Fox himself, a former president of Coca-Cola, gave the company concessions to exploit community water resources. The violation of workers' rights continue to this present day. Karl Marx's labour theory of value puts forward the notion that the value of a commodity depends on the relative quantity of labour which is necessary for its production. In this case, we see the inequalities between the workplace and a company with little regard for human rights. Workers are not numbers, not units, and should never be regarded as dispensable. An excellent book by Richie Venton in his book Break the Chains, which ends with, and I quote, "Break the chains that manacle the millions for the profits and powers of the millionaires. After all, we've nothing to lose but our chains."
Are you ready for this, brother? Freddy comes around. We're marching to George Square. We're never backing down. Standing behind our leaders. For changes we will press. We want a revolution. We'll leave with nothing less. Strong, raise a red flag, comrades. We know we're not alone, but a
but we're not beaten yet.
How's it going? It's been a while. I'm not even bothering with an introduction, telling you that I'm Deborah Torn from O'Guy. Oh wait, I just done it. I said I wasn't going to do something, then I done it anyway. That's a bit like Brexit, eh? We're Brexiting on regardless, except it's no Brexit as we know it, because nobody actually knows what Brexit is. Plan A is now Plan B, because Plan B is just Plan A with no concessions on any concessions. In theory, it is Britain leaving the European Union that it helped establish, by the way. But first, what is Britain? Britain is a democracy, ruled by a monarchy who can cut about without seatbelts and crash Land Rovers into other vehicles with babies in them, then the next day go driving again without a seatbelt. The democracy part is on shaky foundations and all, considering it's perfectly okay for members of Parliament to turn up to their work in the House of Commons, half cut on brandy and acting like a pompous, condescending town crier. Or be fleeing out your actual nut with your chin in paisley, slabbering about the time you reenacted the scene for Bodyguard with Boris Johnson. Or the actual physical foundations of the whole building in Whitehall might just be disintegrating after decades of high cocaine use and subsequent chemical reactions in the ancient sandstone from build-up of massive crackbergs in the antiquated sewers. I really like to think that there is some sort of noxious gas emanating from the sewers under Parliament, infecting otherwise reasonable people. Either that or an alien parasitic robotic queen is controlling them. How can elected members, professional politicians who other people voted for, be in the middle of this Brexit shit show and be like, "Aye, Geoffrey, let's debate low-down letterboxes"? There's Polish Royal Mail posties right now whose UK settlement status is under threat because of our Brexit exit strategy, and they are slow clapping. But what is Britain? Like, really? Well, we are an independent island coastal state in the North Atlantic on the edge of the landmass of Europe. A group of islands consisting of two countries, England and Scotland, a principality, I'm sorry Wales, Cymru and Bythn, and a region, aye, Northern Ireland, you. After Brexit, there's a real possibility we will be the former empirical nation known as Great Britain, now of England and Wales, with caveats of incorporation in Iron Alba, grasping on to the last remnants of colonial rule and commonwealth, being reaped from far-flung outposts. And oh, the beaches, we will fight on the beaches. Pretty sure that indigenous populations of all those red bits in that old empirical globe fought on the beaches too. How's your blue passports, lads? We had promises of 500,000 watt hoovers and a zillion euros for the NHS. Jobs in coal mining again and Dyson Hoovers opening plants in Stornoway, no Singapore. Fracking pipe dreams. Some sort of pipe. Has anybody ever tested the walls in the debating chamber? Like for an organic mould created by the sweat of 1,000 old gamins steeped in whiskey and cigars with the exhaled breath of meth smokers? Like seriously? All that leather and wood and anger and vitriol and buzzwords? There must be some absorption of neutrons somewhere. I've been in that chamber. I wasn't in it long because there was too many rules about touching stuff I definitely didn't touch and sitting on the benches where I definitely didn't sit. Also, I was in a wheelchair and couldn't fit through the space at the entrance into the chamber, so I had to walk with my stick and I was a bit paranoid because my crutch was marked on the carpet. Like that time at an Old Firm match in Hampden when security took my crutch off me in case I got sectarian and I was told to just wait in the middle of the stand in the event of a terrorist attack. I felt under undue tension at stoating about the debating chamber in the House of Commons like that. But maybe it was the noxious gases that accumulated in all that leather and wood and porous materials. It did smell fusty. I'm no leaving this theory on drugs impairing the function in a parliament, no. Because seriously, have you seen Theresa May's face lately? Either she's snorting Barocca in the morning, or she's had major Botox injected into her complete skull above the neck. She has zero emotion until she's caught in the corner like a cat with a balloon stuck in its fur. She actually screamed at an SNP MP to abandon the policy of independence. Screamed it! Like, that noise you hear at night and think, damn those foxes, but then hear it again later on and think that really sounds like a woman getting murdered. I think there is some sort of chemical reaction in the sewers combined with centuries of absorbed body odours in the chamber inflicting an adverse reaction on our elected members of parliament. Bear with me. I spend a lot of time in accident and emergency. I have seen some of the most heavily drugged out their mind people. I have been one. Once they gave me ketamine and I couldn't blink, actually couldn't blink. Have you seen the Secretary of State for Scotland lately? Anyway, on ketamine, I was tripping out my nut and the nurse's face was swirling and I kept saying, and I was grunting and baying like an animal, apparently. And I've seen that happen in Parliament, a grown man. Mind that video of Osborne, and he was apparently coked to his nuts sitting on the front bench. I do that exact same thing on gas and air when they're relocating my shoulder in an accident emergency. I think the British government needs to enforce some of those air quality and noxious gas emission monitoring laws from Europe on their own house afore we Brexit. Brexit. The stupidest word for the stupidest thing we've ever done. Britain leaving the European Union? Nah, that's too long for a hashtag, pal. It's like when someone in your group says lol in a real life conversation that isn't a WhatsApp message. Brexit is like a WhatsApp group message, in fact. Trying to organise a night out or an event where you all have to agree and shit. Meanwhile, Peter keeps sending Kylie memes. Brexit is peak Britain. Great British, Britannic Britain. In Britain right now, there's people sleeping in bins. Big industrial waste containers. Bin men need to check inside before they empty them because it's more than likely a homeless person could be taking refuge in there. In Britain right now, there's children stealing tomato sauce from school so they can add hot water at home to make soup. Because they're starving. In Britain right now, there are unemployed folk sanctioned for having a heart attack in the middle of a work capability assessment. These aren't jokes, but Brexit is.
Invites me. name's Mary Hunter, and I'm a councillor in Glasgow City Council. So, first of all, I'm going to talk about the equal pay resolution here in Glasgow. And as listeners will know, the council and claimants have agreed a settlement to end the equal pay dispute. And the amount is just over half £1 billion. Now, this is quite an eye-watering amount, but we made a commitment to end the equal pay dispute before we were elected, and that obviously means accepting the financial burden of funding it. And it is a great relief to SNP councillors to have reached this stage. The negotiations are very complex and difficult, and there were times where we really couldn't see the light at the end of the tunnel, but we got there in the end, and I'm very proud that we actually grasped this nettle. The financial plan to enable us to settle these claims is challenging, and it may be controversial in some quarters. The details will become public shortly as we head into the council's budget setting process. And there will, I've no doubt, be calls for the Scottish Government to simply write a cheque for the whole amount. But they really can't do this. Firstly, because they don't have the money. And secondly, because it wouldn't be fair to other councils across Scotland. Why should they get less because of a decade of poor decision-making in Glasgow? No, this is Glasgow's debt, and Glasgow has to find a way to pay for it. There is an upside, though, that I'm not sure everyone has considered. £500 million will be going out of Glasgow City Council, but it will be going to, overwhelmingly, working-class women who live in Glasgow. For some of these women, the amounts will be life-changing. For all of them, it will be money available to be spent here in Glasgow, where they and their families live and work. So as much as there is a high cost to this, we can also expect to see a benefit for Glasgow's economy, and that should be something that we all welcome. And I'm just going to talk a little bit about where we are in terms of Brexit, the never-ending drama of Brexit, and the next referendum on independence. And there's been a fair bit of angst on social media regarding Brexit and the timescale for a second independence referendum. There are those who argue that there needs to be a referendum straight away so that Scotland can avoid Brexit. Then there are those who say that we need to wait a number of years until the impact of Brexit is felt to call the next independence referendum. And then there are those like me who are somewhere in the middle. We can't have a referendum straight away. We need a Section 30 order, and then we need to legislate for a referendum. We do want to do this as quickly as possible, but we need to recognise that it may take some time depending on the response we get from Westminster. So why do we need a Section 30 order? Why not just go ahead ourselves? Because for an independence referendum to have meaning, to be capable of giving effect to a yes vote, it needs to be recognised by Westminster. There are those who don't like this, and I don't like it myself, but it is a simple political fact. Unless the UK recognises Scottish independence, no one else will. So independence does require agreement from the UK. The Edinburgh Agreement in 2013 enabled us to hold a referendum with the support of Westminster, with the Prime Minister agreeing to honour the result. It's fairly evident that they agreed to that because they thought that the yes side would lose. And indeed, we did lose. But we took the vote up to 45%, which was far higher than they'd expected. We won't get another chance like that again. The UK government is now aware that we could win the next referendum, therefore they won't concede it easily. As we know, power concedes nothing without a demand. So we need to build the demand for a second referendum and for independence. And that's why many people, including myself, feel we need to be campaigning now to try and increase support for our position. To identify undecided voters and soft no voters, so that we can persuade them that independence is best for them and for their families. The SNP has asked its members to start this kind of canvassing. We're getting ready. But we need to accept that we may not have a referendum date for some time. That shouldn't stop us campaigning. It's not stopping the SNP, it's not stopping the Greens, it's not stopping a plethora of local Yes groups on the ground. We don't need a referendum date to campaign for independence. Rather, I would argue we need to campaign for independence in order to get a referendum date. And we should be getting out into our communities right now, talking to people about independence. The firing gun has been started, and nobody should be waiting.
Was a time I'll always remember. I could never forget how reality came down around us like some Western movie set. When the dust all settled, the sun shone so bright, and a great calm took over us like it was all gonna be alright. That's how it felt to be alive after the revolution. From Groton to Tacoma, on many a factory floor, the workers talked of solidarity and refused to build weapons of war. No more will we make missiles, we're gonna do something different. And for the first time, their children were proud of their parents. Somewhere in Gaza, a little boy smiled and cried. After the revolution, prison doors swung open, mothers hugged their sons. The Liberty Bell was ringing when the cops put down their guns. A million innocent people lit up in the springtime air. And Mumia and Leonard and Sarah Jane Olson took a walk in Tompkins Square. And they talked about what they do now after the revolution. Debts were all forgiven in all the neo colonies. Soldiers left their bases, went back to their families. A non-aggression treaty was signed with every sovereign state. All the terrorist groups disbanded with no empire left to hate. They all started planting olive trees after the revolution. George Bush and Henry Kissinger were sent off to the world court. Their plans for global domination were preemptively cut short. Their weapons of mass destruction were inspected and destroyed. Battleships dismantled, never again to be deployed. And the world breathed a sigh of relief after the upon the tracks. Organic food was in the markets, no GMOs upon the racks. And all the billionaires had to learn how to share. Bill Gates was told to quit his whining when he said it wasn't fair. And his mansion became a collective farm. After the revolution, all the political poets couldn't think of what to say, so they all decided to live life for today. I spent a few years catching up with all my friends and lovers, sleeping till 11, home beneath the covers. And I learned how to play the accordion after the revolution.
Tales of the Gearlock by Acting Strange Theatre Company. You old bastard. Come on, I want to show you the cellar. You see, you're not alone, my Tory friend. There. See? You aren't alone. Only this one is going to live. Aren't you, boy? Hodder. Poor guy. Says little else. Can't move from there either. That fucker in the freezer stuck the spade in his back when I was burying him. Hodder. And this is the fucker I told you about, fella. Hodder! Hodder! Aye. Calm down now. He can't harm us. His money is now resting in our wee account across the water. Just like the money your wife is going to sign over. Did I ever tell you about when I was on a mission, son? Blower, you like this wee tale. Hodder? Well, me and Clark, we were great buddies. We knew each other since we were wee bairns. God, when this happened, we weren't that old. About 10 or 12. Anyway, we loved the superheroes. Clark, of course, loved Superman. He said his ma named him after Superman because he was his uncle. But he didn't know I knew his ma named him after the shoe shop. That's where he was born. It was a bit of a surprise. She didn't even know she was pregnant. Anyway, one day Clark has this idea. He said, I know how we can be superheroes. His ideas were always great. Like the time we wanted to go and see Laurel and Hardy in the pavilion, and we hid in the back of the breed van. How were we to know it was going to Edinburgh? But it was great. We went up to the castle and saw Hodder. Aye. Sorry, I'm getting a wee bit waylaid. Anyway, we used to collect the American superhero comics. One of them was about that Spider-Man and how he got his powers. Clark said, there is no spiders that bite over here, so we have to make do. That's why we stole Grayson's fox terrier. It hated everyone but Grayson. It was a real struggle to muzzle the bugger, but we managed to do it with a bit of twine. Anywho, I said to Clark, what about the nuclear chemicals the spider eats before it bites Spider-Man? He'd already thought of that. We hauled Grayson's Dug up to the Calico Works. He wasn't allowed in there, of course, but we knew a way through the fence at the back. The back of the factory, this yellow, glowing stuff, gloopy stuff, not like water, but chemicals poured out into the loch. I remember, said to Clark, there was a flaw in the plan. I couldn't see it, but I did. Anyway, when we got there, he ducked the dog's head under the stink. The dog struggled and wriggled a bit, and lashed out and choked. Then we untied him, and he went for Clark first. Jumped up at him and sunk his teeth into his shudder. I grabbed the dog and pushed him under the water. Clark laughed, even though the blood was pishing out of him. Anyway, the dog struggled and wriggled, and then Clark said, "It's your turn." I let the dog go, and it turned on me. And it bit me in the hand and then ran away along the shore, howling. Clark said, "Jesus, Jack," he said, "Jesus, you mustn't taste very good." "Ha ha, harder." No, that wasn't his plan. The plan had a flaw, but anyway, I went along with it. We jumped the Calico Works big wall. It must have been about 20 feet. Really huge to us. We jumped together. At the same time, and as we fell through the sky, Clark was giving all this kind of squirty noise, pointing his wrist at the Calico Works factory wall. Well, that's all I remember, till I woke up a few days later. Hodder? Clark, well, he'd been a good mate. I never saw him again. He was buried when I was knocked out. When I woke up, I had nothing really wrong, but I knew.
Hodder?
Aye. The dog died too. The poisons in the Calico Works waste killed it. And the flaw in his plan was that a chemically infected dog doesn't turn you into Spider-Man. But I know that it made me kind of invincible. You know, in the Falklands, no bullet came near me. I just walked across that moor and shot the fuck out those Argies. I'm Wolfman. Only a silver bullet. Grayson's nuclear dug made me invincible. Now, here, I'll put the wee telly on and you can watch your wee Game of Thrones or your Breaking Bad. Which one? Heisenberg? I'll leave you two to get to know each other. I'm away to meet your wife, to get her signature at the pub. Do you want to see her before I do away with her? I guess not. Anyway, I'm off. If I can get through the crowd outside. Those bloody sellout Labour bastards should have known that there would be trouble when they said they would hold on to these nukes.
No, PC Miko, I'm not in control of the crowd. No one is. The fact is, when the Labour government leaked that they were allowing the nukes to stay, the people took control. Some of these people have never been on a demo before.
It's getting dangerous, Caroline. The British Army are issuing orders to protect the docks at any cost. The Scottish Government are powerless.
Is that why they've ordered the Scottish regiments to make the way over?
That is for your and these people's protection.
Just what we need. The Commodore and one of our stone souls.
Peaceful protest is good, people. But in this case, unnecessary. The Westminster Government acknowledges your fury on how you were fooled before the yes vote. The Yes campaign could not deliver something that was impossible. The people spoke. You elected a Labour government who saw sense. A government that understands that the threat from other countries can only be met with nuclear weapons. It was a democratic decision. You voted yes, and then you voted for a sensible pro-nuclear government. Go home! Anyway, this is a wee song to help you on your way.
God, what's he doing?
Founder, what are you doing? This isn't part of the plan.
Okay, people, gather round. We're on the eve of destruction.
What are these boxes?
Oh, these?
Shit, what is that stuff strapped to the room?
These, man? Oh, these are your journey into this place of evil. To the few canisters of Microfuel. Enough to bring the fence down and anything within 10 yards of it. And my journey out will be voted for a free Scotland. But we're still in the shackles of this war machine.
Take a look around you, boy.
The war machine has got me free at last. Free at last.
Aye, further.
Further away.
PC Meikle, just lie down. They'll be helping away soon. Jesus, further, could you not have taken out that tannoy as well?
The fish is down. Let's go!
Ach, it's nice to see you, Maisie. How did you get through all the army folk, and the news people, and the ambulances, and the rubble from the brace? Thank the stars the English saw fit to sail out.
Oh, Dad, never mind the brace. What have you done? Your house? Again?
Ah, Maisie, you know me. Can't help myself. Anyone trying to harm folk, well, I have to deal with them.
Dad, I had to keep the kids in the car for 3 hours while I got rid of the bodies.
Well, weren't all bodies until you decided I had to go.
Well, what were you going to do with Mr. Blower? He would have talked.
Ah, I could have kept him drunk. A wee pet. I get lonely, you know. And as for that woman, I'm glad she had signed the money over to me before you got your hands on her.
I didn't do anything to that fella in bed. He said he was your pal. He told me where the other bodies were. I guess by the way he was nice and comfortable and all that, you want to keep him?
Aye, he's harmless. I'm going to keep him. He's good company. He and I pretend to be in the Game of Thrones. I'm the wolf guy.
Dad, it's going to have to stop. You promised.
Keep your voice down. Aye, I promised. But when I found old Hoder in there, in that hole, covered in mud, with his limbs chopped off, I knew I had to help him. And then the other fella turned up again, looking for him. And then old Blower tries to pull a fast one over the village. And then it turns out both of them have money that I can do good with.
And how do you plan to keep all that money? I mean, you know nothing about banking and offshore accounts.
Old Holder does. He's an international, well, was an international banker. He has secret accounts and money trails set up all over the place. That money will all be used for the good of the village. And the first beneficiaries are to be those two young people setting up that Indian restaurant. They are going to find a donation on their doorstep as soon as all of this mess outside is cleared up.
Oh, Dad. Anyway, your house is fine. All the bodies are gone, dissolved in a tub and flushed away.
You deserve a drink. Frackleton! I don't suppose old Blower, God rest his soul, will mind if we crack open his brandy.
Now, Dad, no more of your silliness. I have to go back to Glasgow now the roads are cleared. Get you into your house and feed Hoder, Donald, and get to bed.
Okay, dear. Don't leave it so long the next time. I even have some of that UHT milk for you.
Sorry?
Never mind. Safe home, hen.
Now promise me, no more silliness.
Ah, okay, pet. Though, if I think someone's trying to harm the village, or those here...
Oh, Dad, get into the house.
Bye, love.
Bye, Dad.
Oh, our Maisie. She is great at clearing up.
Psst.
Eh?
Psst.
Hello?
Jack, can you help me? I need to use your phone. If I can phone the Commodore down at the shore, they'll have reason to come up into the village. And I can say that some of this hippie scum had tied me up.
And you brought your mandolin and all. Come in, Commodore. I'll make you a wee cuppa. Oh, can you help me with something before you phone? It's down in the cellar.
guns exploding,
violence flaring, bullets loading. You're old enough to kill, but not for voting. You don't believe in war, but what's that gun you're toting? And even the Jordan River has bodies floating. And you tell me over and over and over again, my friend, you don't believe we're on the eve of destruction. Don't you understand what I'm trying to say? Can't you feel the fear I'm feeling today? If the button is pushed, there's no running away. There'll be no one to save with a world in its grave. Take a look around you, boy, it's bound to scare you, boy. And yeah, tell me over and over and over again, my friend, how you don't believe we're on the eve of destruction. Yeah, my blood so bad feels a coagulating. I'm sitting here just contemplating. I can't twist the truth, there's no regulation. A handful of senators don't pass legislation, and the marches alone can't bring integration. And human respect, it's disintegration. And this whole crazy world is just too frustrating. And you tell me over and over and over again, my friend, I don't believe we're on the eve of destruction. Think of all the hate there is in Red China. Take a look around to Selma, Alabama. You leave here for 4 days in space. You return, it's the same old place. The pounding of the drum, the pride and disgrace. You can't bury your dead, but don't leave a trace. Hate your next door neighbor, but don't forget to say grace. And yeah, tell me over and over and over again, my friend, you don't believe we're on the eve of destruction. How you don't believe we're on the eve of destruction. I don't believe we're on the eve of destruction.
That was an Acting Strange Theatre Company production. Caroline was played by Alex McKenzie. The Commodore, Pauline Bradley. Donald, Robert Alexander. Jack, Neil Anderson. Maisie, Ashley Edgar. Other characters were played by members of the cast. Original music by Tut Vuvu.